Hello and welcome to Magical Baddies. I'm Leah.
I'm Sophia.
And this is the Real Live podcast on all things mystical, magical, spiritual. Did I get it?
You did. We're
I
having
don't
fun today. We're having fun.
know. Yeah. Good save. Good save. But today is a special day because we are talking about the Akashic Records. The Akashic field, all things Akashic. Both of us are trained in Akashic, in an Akashic practice, and we use it in different ways. But this is like the primary, thing that brought us together. We met in an Akashic teacher training, and both of us have been doing this work for many years and many years combined. And so we thought, like, we have a critical lens on this podcast. Let's be critical of our own practice and talk about what this practice is to us in general. So,
Yeah.
Sophia, what are your thoughts just as we kick this off?
I have so many. So I think we have to start with I personally think we should start with the kind of catch-all that the Akashic Records has become.
Yeah.
I have found even like kind of we've had this conversation before with energy work, it's all sort of become a catch-all that everyone does Reiki. But energy work has existed way beyond before and in other cultures outside of
Yeah.
Japan. They call it like the touch of the king or a various amount of other lineages. And I think with the Akashic Records, it's also become this catch-all for psychics and mediums.
Yeah.
In my personal experience, I was raised with seers. I was raised in root work and, psychic and mediumship. That was stuff that was like all really in my realm of understanding. And when I first started working with the Akashic Records, through the Linda Howe process, actually before I started with Linda Howe, I worked through it through other prayers,
Yeah.
but I was just kind of like, I don't see the difference.
Yeah.
However, when I got deeper into the practice, you start to feel a difference. And
Yeah.
so what I have found is that there's like a very nuanced line of psychic mediumship and Akashic work. But I really feel that it has become this like generic catch-all for psychic mediums.
Yeah.
Psychic mediums.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I actually felt from the jump when I first started this work a very clear distinction between the psychic realm and the Akashic realm. Like it and the thing that I always, when I'm teaching people, the thing that I always tell them that I envision is like, in the old Willy Wonka, when Mike TV goes into like the TV room and you see like the candy bar go from one TV to another and it goes in like little bits over their head. I'm like, that's the psychic realm. It's like 18 inches above your head. You could just reach up and grab something to fit into your question. And the Akashic realm is like the bigger picture over like an overview, bigger level than that. That's such a simplistic, obviously, clearly over centralized like way of looking at it, but like it made so much sense to me because I could go in and I could do Akashic readings for people, but when they asked for psychic information, I'm not a psychic, so I like had a hard time grasping like, how much will this investment return to me? Or like, when will I sign the deed on this house? Or like those things that are like psychic pieces of information were just like, I have no fucking idea, man. I don't know when these things are gonna happen. But the Akashic would kick in and the perspective of the soul would become like almost like so clear to me. Like, here's the soul level thing of what you're asking, but the actual time and place stuff, I don't know. But
Yeah, I
we just
think
jumped
that,
over a bunch right
yeah,
now.
we did. But I think that that's a really good point because I think it has a lot to do with my teachers too, right? I like
Yeah.
understanding the difference. And though one of them, she's passed, I remember before taking the class, I actually got an Akashic reading, and the Akashic reader was like, just be gentle when you're in the class. And when I got in, like, I picked the information that I need, but you could tell she didn't differentiate or understand. And also, it was like my first step into the Linda Howe way of doing things, and everything was very rigid. Like, this is how you do it. And it didn't like resonate. And I think that that's why I didn't feel anything. But when I started working on my own and I started questioning those teachings, and I was like, okay, let me like maneuver into what I feel is right. It was a lot like trance work, honestly. And if you're not, not that if you're not careful, but you have to get comfortable in it. And it took me a couple years to like
For
really
sure.
not feel it affect my real life. It was really intense because through that like adjustment period, like lights were too bright, noises were too loud. Everything was so weird and wobbly and whatever. And what I recognized in it is that in this work, what I really didn't feel, and this is what I fight against all the time, and this is a reason why I don't call myself an Akashic Records practitioner, is that the Akashic Records, like what you see out there is this is a celestial library of all information. And I'm like, it's not a one place. It's not a thing. It's not a, you know, it's such a human thing to be like, this is the name, this is what it is, this is how it works. That's just not the case. Not also defining, but what I felt was like there was different levels. Like when I really felt into my body, that resonance, like you would be in one realm and then you would be in another. I don't know if it's realm or dimensions or what it is, but as I let go, it just felt like I was exploring this like complete abyss of limitless nothingness. And it's wonky. It's really wonky. And so, like, yeah, when I would do readings and people are like, should I be with my boyfriend? It's always like, you already know the answer. Like, don't, you can miss me with that bullshit because we're out here looking at the grand scope of things. Do you want to talk to your other consciousnesses that are working on these
It's
timelines?
so funny.
But it's like, you know, and that's one of the reasons why, well, that, and I've done plenty of drugs in my life, but and I'm, you know, but that's one of the reasons why I don't really need it anymore. Because when you're out there, you're like, what is happening? What are these concepts? What are these? And it's this like the further I get into this work, like I took a break because of that like catch-all concept, and I didn't want to feel locked into an idea. But the
100
further I do
percent.
this work, I'm so devoted to it because it's so like mind-bending. Like there's just so much out there, and you get so close to touching it and it just moves and it's like so fucking cool. But yeah, it's more than just all your information of your past lives and current lives. I just think there's just so much more information and knowledge, and man, the sheer like unbound love that you feel when you're out there, no matter where you are or what that frequency is, it's like it's euphoric.
Totally. I think you're okay, not to like make this hierarchical or anything, but I think like you jumped into your training already at, I mean, you already by nature have like a very expansive ability to perceive whatever existence, spirituality, whatever we want to call it. Like, and I think a lot of people that are interested, because I've at this point, I've taught hundreds and hundreds of people how to read the records. I've taught like intro classes for many years and taught tons of people. And a lot of people are so called to it, but are very scared, are very locked into their human perspective. And so for me, like one of the things that makes sense now that the records have like, I mean, I'm even calling it the records is a misnomer because that's not what I'm talking to anymore, but
right.
I'm going to use it as shorthand because that's the word we know, the phrase we know. But like people coming into the practice at that place need the confinement of that small concept because that's what feels safe. And right. then some people like myself, I can just speak for myself. Like there came a time when like that small term was like, I'm clearly going somewhere else besides this little idea. And like, I need something bigger. And then once you get to that point, it's like language doesn't even make sense. Like asking a question, like, should I be with my boyfriend? The answer to that is like, yes and no at the same time. You know, like, like, you know, you start to like, to the best of my ability, I started to like grapple with a concept like infinite possibilities. And that's so, how do you put words to that? How do you be certain? And so like one of the things that you always say, which I resonate with a lot, which the records have like guided me through, is like, the more I learn, the less I know, you know, like it's true that, but like, it's also like at the same time for me, the less certainty is important. The less yeah. knowing is even important. The more I realize I was staying on my little shore of my little island, trying to define my existence through what do I know? What can I be certain of? And having an experience of with the Akasha is like, who cares about that? That's not even who you are. That's like one moment of existence that you're experiencing is Leah right there knowing. But also, who cares? Like,
yeah.
And so I got into this whole, like, you know, my freaking like psychedelic hippie period where I was just like, I don't even exist. Leah is already gone. Like saying this shit on Instagram, like telling people, like, I don't have a preference because I'm not even here. Like, but it's true. Like, I can feel that non-existence at the same yeah. time that I feel my existence. And it's because what I believe is it's because I've opened up to this Akashic perspective 24/7 in my life, like all yeah. the time. I feel like we just hit the ground running and we should like back up and talk about like what even is the Akashic records, the Akashic field, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because you were hitting on some notes because what I wanted to do was kind of, obviously we had this conversation before we recorded, but somebody had asked you, you know, is doing the Akashic Records cultural appropriation?
Right.
And so me, by my nature, I wanted to be like, are we culturally appropriating? And yeah. so I wanted to do some like historical research and also cross-examine that with other cultures. And yeah. what you were hitting on with like this is basically, you know, as we grow and expand and evolve, I feel a lot of the point of our existence is removing limit and yeah. continuing towards limitlessness.
Yeah.
And that's a very Kabbalic way of looking at things because mm-hmm. there's the Ein, the Ein Sof, and the Ein Sofor. And so Ein is nothing. It's mm-hmm. void. But mm-hmm. what we understand about void is that I think people use it so inappropriately online and it drives me crazy because it's part of my name, but but in nothingness comes the chaos to create order, mm-hmm. right? And so yeah. black is the color that is without color and of all colors, and so we have to look mm-hmm. at it at that. And so that is like the highest part of the Godhead, because this is before existence, this is before any of that. And then the mm-hmm. Ein Sof is kind of where I would categorize the Akasha. The Ein Sof is no limit, it's the complete opposite, right? And that's where mm-hmm. we're trying to ascend to, I guess theoretically, you know, intellectually, spiritually, is this removal of boundaries. And from that is like creation, that is our divine eminence to creation, which is yeah. Ein Sof, which is the closest yeah. thing to us.
Yeah.
It's the eternal light, and it's the eternal light in the concept of being human. So like the grace of light, the grace of God, the grace of creation, it's like the bridge, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so like what you were defining for your experience is very Kabbalistic in that way.
Yeah.
You know, we're limited, we're earthbound, we're Ein Sofer, and then we're trying to build that bridge towards limitlessness. And as we expand, we remove those buildings, and we open ourselves up. And I think that you're completely right. As people are like drawn to this, people like to be told what to do.
People
want instruction.
Yeah.
It feels safe. And ultimately, like, that's the unknown is so close to fear that it's helpful for people, right?
Yeah, I wanted that when I first started. I wanted to know, how do you do it? What do I say?
Tell me what to do. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
I have to practice every day. I don't want to do that. So the word Akashic, like backing up, the Akashic Records was coined by Madame Blavatsky. And Madame Blavatsky, she's a interesting figure in history, but what we cannot ignore is that in her way, she brought the East to the West, and that helped formulate this kind of mesh between the two worlds. Like, we already had the existence of Western mysteries traditions, Rosicrucianism, like Freemasonry, but this helped bridge those parts. And so what she was saying is that, you know, I did all these Vedic texts, I read the Mahabharata, I read the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and, you know, I'm bringing this in to swirl it into the Theosophical Society much later after she tried to touch in spiritualism. Anyways, she's interesting and awesome, and I don't really care what anyone thinks about her, but I think that she coined it because we had this conversation before. We like to put names on things to the highest level of technology that we have. So like a record was the highest form, kind of the same way that like now we download
or
upgrade.
Yeah.
So the basis of that word comes from the five tattvas in yogic theory, which is the prithvi, which is earth, apas, which is water, agni, which is fire, vayu, which is air, and then the akasha, which is ether, right? And so these are basically the formulations of how things exist, how they are created. And it's, you know, through Ayurvedic studies and yogic studies, there's a combination of these things that create whatever. And the akasha is ether, it's space. It's where the divine exists. But then when I read through, I was like, I don't see any concept of practice around this. This is just element. So then I looked into North mythology because the Aesir also means ether, and the Aesir were gods like Odin, Freya, a very specific realm of gods that lived in Asgard, which is space, ether, and there's a bridge to it, the Bifrost Bridge. So what I
I've seen
is
Thor, so I know this.
So what I found was then going back to the Yoga Sutras, there's something called Akasha Gamana, which is basically just not just, it's a lot more complicated, but it's basically meditation to the fullest to build the bridge to the Akasha, to space, to the ether. And so they call it the yogic power to walk on air or walk through air. So Patanjali, who wrote the Yoga Sutras, that's what he's famous for. He says that distinguished markers are certain people and siddhis, which are realized attainments of yoga. So like these gurus achieve this ability through concentration. So there's a practice of samaya or samyama, which is continuous deliberation, and citta, which is the receptive self on an object. So your concentration on an object. And then there's three stages. This is a lot of information, but we're going to get to the point. holding the object in mind, reflection and meditation. And from that, one can command the complete knowledge of an idea or desired power. Mm-hmm. So this is what we're talking about. We're not talking about being able to have a psychic ability. We're concentrating to the desire and the idea of which it is conceptualized. So in terms of, you know, is this a cultural appropriation practice? I'm a little split on it. Conceptually speaking, I don't think it's culturally appropriated because it exists beyond in many cultures, Buddhism, Hinduism, in mythology, in Kabbalistic studies, also in Islamic. So the conceptually speaking, like, how can you culturally appropriate something that exists that we know so deeply?
Yeah.
As a practice, there is a practice, and I don't know if they opened with the prayer. What I do know in studying bhakti is we did a lot of vibrations and kirtans, and that is a very common thing, chanting. And if you've ever done any of that and you're vibrating appropriately, it does something to you.
Yeah.
It completely removes the heavy bodies that surround us. Yeah. So, you know, are we connecting that to a prayer, because that's what we know in Western society, probably. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just think that there's a lot of, for me, I don't know if it's culturally appropriating, because we can say the same about meditation. We can say the same about energy work. We can say the same about a lot of things, but they exist throughout many cultures. They just face in different ways.
Yeah.
So there's a little history.
Yeah. This is how I teach it too. So I'm now leading a year-long Akashic mentorship. And the way we started out was by first reference, like I gave them three concepts as a historical frame. One was the Akasha or the Akas. And we talked about the Vedic text. We talked about it being a classical element. But I also mentioned exactly what you said, that classical elements exist in cosmology stories and creation stories across the globe. The primary elements of like earth, fire, air, like that is everywhere. And then I talk about the Akashic records, which if we're going to talk about cultural appropriation, that would be the first cultural appropriation like movement. And then I talk about the transition into like the concept of the Akashic field as a partners with, like, as it brings into concepts like quantum mechanics and like M theory and string theory and, you know, theory of everything, that kind of unified field theory that got popular around the turn of the 1900s.
Or when that movie came out.
Theory of everything. That movie came out like several years after the actual theory.
Okay, but it's a great movie.
It was, it was like the 70s. But so the thing that I had mentioned when we talked about the cultural appropriation thing, which I think is such a cool, this is such an important and cool thing to talk about when as it applies to spiritual like practices. But my perspective is that cultural appropriation is ontological. So like, it's a concept that was born in the colonial world that by colonial people who are trying to get justice for the bad things that colonialism does. Like colonialism goes in and destroys cultures. Like we live in the United States, we live in a place where, like, you know, Native American people were not just completely killed, but they were like put into boarding schools so that their culture could be erased and then they could be assimilated into like the new American culture. So like culture is a huge commodity in the culture, in the colonial world. It's a commodity. It's like whose culture has power, who doesn't, how do we shift cultures? There's like huge arguments around like the influence of hip hop in mainstream culture, or like the influence of like hip hop in like couture and, you know, high fashion. And like, where is that stealing? Is it, you know, all this stuff. So like, in that world, in the world of colonialism, in the world where social justice is important, where people are trying to get equity for the ways that colonialism has destroyed people and cultures. Yeah, you could say that this is culturally appropriative, but that is not an argument enough for me to like not do this, because in other ontologies, we understand, or it is understood that like, well, okay, so let me back up. So like in the concept of cultural appropriation, the person who is naming the appropriation, like, hey, that's culturally appropriative, they're presupposing that they are the savior. I'm noticing right. that thing is being destroyed. I have the power to save it. I'm going to save it. That in and of itself is a colonial perspective. You know, like, that's a colonial mindset, to think that you can save something that is limitless. It is a primary element of all of creation. The other part is this, like, you're holding on to the idea that culture is a commodity, rather than culture being a fluid thing that changes and shifts when people interact with it and move with it and share it. And, you know, so it's just, there's so many, like, for anyone that has like approached me with like, you're culturally appropriative because of it, I'm like, okay, because there's nothing from that I can say to that person who's living in that world, in that ontology, that will be good enough to defend why I'm not culturally appropriative. So I've just like let go of that, like, tug of war completely.
I also think that sometimes with the cultural appropriation, it comes down to something that is so shallow and based off of color. And it's fucked up because, so, you know, I've never been approached about it, but like, if you want to look at it in that way, and say like, hey, look, if you come to me and like, am I ever going to practice Haitian voodoo? No, that is a very close practice. That is not mine, right? I know that. But in terms of the Akasha and Bhakti and all of that, like, first off, there's like legions of people practicing. And I don't think that it's a bad thing if it's helping people find their way to a Godhead. The other part of it is, my dad's from South Vietnam, and that area is originally called the Kingdom of Champa, which is very influenced by Hinduism. So, you know, I don't know. Like, I just feel like it's presumptuous sometimes.
Yeah.
And also, like, it's hard because it is a fine line, because there's been conversations between us where we're like, I don't know about that. But spiritually speaking, is that what your soul is calling you to?
Yeah.
You know, and for me, I feel one of my calls is to help people bridge their own connection to whatever this is. And I think that that is why I really like looking at grimoires and historical texts and codex, because I want to see what it has looked like in the past. Yeah. And ultimately speaking, this whole like mixing of cultures is not new, like whatsoever.
No. Yeah, so, no.
You know, even if like someone's like, oh, I'm Polish because my 23andMe says that. Okay, well, when did your grandma come over? Because dependent on the time it was actually the Ukraine. So like, you don't know. We're creating boundaries around ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, you know, like, can I share an experience I had?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So when we were doing our teacher training, we were out there. We out here. And I saw Santa Muerte. She appeared and I felt it and it was intense and I was scared. And I was like, okay, because I'm still existent. I'm cognizant of the fact that that is a very close practice and people are they feel very strongly about that. So I felt like I need to back up. I don't know where I am, but you know, whatever. Cause I'm just exploring.
Mm-hmm.
And B, I was like, why the fuck is she here? But one of my guides that I feel very tied and true to, because I've had so many lifetimes with them, is Anubis. And Anubis was there with me And Anubis was like, it's okay. You have to listen to what she has to say. And she didn't speak, but she showed me this child. And she said, I want you to have this child. And it was a small little girl who was like unloved, uncared for. Like my heart broke for her. She was disheveled. And I was like really scared. And I was like, at that time, you know, I was like, I'm not having more kids. There's like no way that's happening.
Yeah.
And Anubis was like, just say yes. Just say yes. So I, against my own, typically I question everything, whether I'm in trance or wherever, because I know I'm co-creative. But I just said yes because I was so fucking scared in that moment. Not scared in fear, because I wouldn't be there if I was fully in fear, but I was taken aback, right?
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, a year and a half later, I got pregnant. I'm pregnant now, right?
Yeah.
With
a disheveled girl.
With a disheveled girl. Although I did talk to my husband later and he's like, do you think you're also giving birth to yourself who felt no love as a little girl? And
I was like, okay, Steve.
Idiot savant.
Just fucking read you up
he
and
did
down.
Just read me.
All right.
To filth. But my point is that I was cognizant of something being a closed practice.
Yeah.
I can't help what was called to me. And listen, if Santa Muerte is going to call on you, like you kind of, you answer that phone call, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I just feel like that space, the casa, the dimensional world, is so vast beyond our understanding, our limitations, however they exist.
Yeah.
You have to kind of decide, do I want to honor this? And listen, appropriation is taking something and watering it down.
Yeah.
I feel when you are really in this work, you are so devotional and honoring this, and you feel it so deeply. Do you want to honor this?
Yeah.
And are you ready to like melt your brain? Because this is what this work is about.
Totally. Yeah. I could just talk at length about appropriation because it's so annoying to me. But like another part about the appropriation argument is like, you have to look at, are you engaging in this thing that could be appropriative? Not in the thing itself, but in the power dynamic in which it oppresses others or the people that it has been stolen from. Right. So for example, if you drink bottled water from Nestle, guess what? They go into cultures that into communities that have no power, no money. They steal their water and then they sell it back to them at prices that they can't afford. Are you doing that with your spiritual practice? So that's like the kind of like questions that I want to be asking people when they want to ask me about appropriation. I'm very like open, and you know, we had the New Age conversation. Like I'm very open about how like what I do is largely considered New Age. It is not related really at all to Hinduism at all,
right,
at the place where I entered it. And there's a history, a lineage that we're now a part of how this thing has like moved through people's hands all the way from like the early Vedas to Edgar Cayce to Linda Howe to like, you know, like it just like it's moved through places. And as you were talking, like I was thinking about, so one of my professors and I would say friend now, he's a scholar, he's Nigerian, and he is Yoruba, and he came and he taught us, he like taught a class with us, and at the end of the class he asked us all to stand in a circle and share something like that we learned that day and to say Ashe. And one of my colleagues was like, I'm not Yoruba, and I don't like practice that. I don't feel comfortable saying Ashe. And he was like, well, consider that Ashe is a spirit, and that when you say it, it has made its presence known through your voice. It chose you. You didn't choose it. And that comes back to that, the subtext of appropriation is that we're the ones in control of this thing that has its own agency. And we're absolutely not, we're
right.
not in control of it. So if something is choosing to work with you, I guess asking yourself those questions, like, am I harming someone with this? Am I oppressing someone? Am I part of an oppressive structure that already exists? Am I like taking this and selling it back to people that don't have the power to practice their own culture to begin with? Like asking those questions. And then even if the answers are yes, you still are an agential being that can make your own decision and say, yeah, I still want to do this. Or no, I don't want to be a part of it. Like instead of what cultural appropriation is trying to do is police people and homogenize, because it's actually not doing the thing it thinks it's doing. Like calling out cultural appropriation is not actually transforming or decolonizing anything. It's a call out. It's a strategy. It's a strategy to homogenize. And so it is good to be aware that it exists, that like culture is like commodified and used against people, but the way it's socially become like this call out thing isn't actually doing the thing that I think it thinks it's doing. Yeah.
No. I also think that a lot of the times, and I'd like to jump off this topic because this is becoming a cultural appropriation thing.
I know, but, and this is not what we wanted.
Yeah, but I do want to say, oftentimes when I do see anything about cultural appropriation, it's often shouted out from the rooftops by a very, it's white women.
A woke or, white lady, yeah.
Or people that are like, return to your indigenous roots. But I think what we're doing is we're spiritually bypassing the fact that we live here now, regardless of our roots and how far back, like we're here now, and we can't progress if we are not conscious of our own realities as they exist, as we have been raised, as we function. So, yes, it's great to like circle back to your ancestors, to be connected with them. I have deep ancestral work. I have a hard time watching any movie that's like new, but you have to function in this reality if we are continuing to turn the wheel.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's important.
I agree. Yeah. Okay. Let's shift because I could just go on and on. Yeah.
So just kidding, guys. This isn't about the Akasha. This is about cultural appropriation.
This is a gotcha episode.
When did you, how did you find the Akashic Records and when?
I just like did this online course real quick the other day and I'm certified now. No, I was unemployed in 2015. I was a teacher and my school had closed and I thought like, cool. I've never not worked from the time I was like 17. I've worked steady my whole life. So I was like 35 and I'd never had a break. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to like have some me time. Cause I thought inevitably I will go back to teaching. I took like metalsmithing classes and I took like all these meditation classes. And one of the things, a friend of mine at the time was like, I work with this woman. She gave me an Akashic record reading, ended up being Helen. And I don't know why, but you need to take this class. You need it. She's doing a beginner class. It's at her house. And I was like, well, I'm unemployed. I don't have money for that. She's like, I'll pay for it. And we took it together, but it was like, I remember like walking up to her house and the moment she opened her door, I was just like, oh my God, this is the most familiar moment of my life. Like I have known you before. This is, and then like when we opened the records for the first time in the class, I was just like a wave of remembering in a way that I had not felt in my life, like a familiarity just swept over me. And it was like, and it doesn't mean I was like automatically, I'm great at this and I'm a natural, but it was like, it was so comforting. And I felt so familiar that I just knew like, I don't even have an opinion on whether I like or dislike this. I just have to do this. I have to do it, and I have to do it every day. And I ended up, so like in that class, I remember it was a bunch of like, cause we're in LA, and Helen at the time lived in Hollywood, and like, or the base of the like Hollywood Hills. And like, so there's like a lot of like white, like West Side yoga ladies in there, like spiritual ladies that either,
oh, I know. Heard about LA. If you throw a rock, you'll hit a shaman.
That's probably true.
I will put air quotes there. Around
shaman. I will put air quotes around shaman though. But I, like the first day we had homework, and the homework was just to go home, open the records and see what you get. And I came back the next day, and we were going around sharing, and everyone's like, oh, they said I need to be more compassionate with myself. They said I need to love myself. Like, I need to like get out in the sunlight more. And then they got to me, and this was like January of 2016. We know what happened at the end of 2016. And they said to me, and I said this to the class, they're like, Donald Trump is going to be elected president, and this is the last election in the United States as we know it. And everyone in the class was like horrified and like, why would you bring that negativity in here? And like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I don't know, dude. I like took one meditation class before this. I've never, I don't know. I don't, I was a teacher. I like, I have
no idea.
It
wasn't me.
Yeah, I was like, I don't fucking know. And I just remember Helen coming up to me afterwards. And mind you, this is like the second day we've met. And she was like, I want you to follow that inquiry. Like, find out more about this. And that just opened a relationship with this. You know, at the time I was like, it's a voice, or I don't know who I'm talking to, guides, whatever. Like, I didn't really know, because it was so not defined or articulated for me. Like, it was a brand new relationship. It was like I went on a first date and we hit it off. And that, you know, like
they were like, you want to hear something gross? And you're yeah. like, yes.
You want to stay up until 6 a.m. talking, and then we go to the beach and then you kiss on the beach. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, let's do that. This is like also like what opened my relationship with resonance, or my understanding of resonance. It was so resonant that it had to be true. Like there was no other way to like define what I was experiencing other than it had to be true. Cause it was a truth now, like, you know, coming from a skeptical world, coming as like an academic, as a teacher, I was very like evidence-based, very material, like proof-based. And I had no material proof or evidence except for that my body was like affirming, like, this is all true for you. And so it was like a level of knowing what is true in a way that I had never experienced before. Yeah. How about you?
So I was about 15. I call her my adoptive mother. Like, my friend in high school, had a mom who, she's awesome. Millie is great. The first time I met her mom, we were all in the car. All the sisters are in the car. And Millie looks up to me and she goes, Sophia, what do you see? And like all the girls are like, no, mom, don't do that. You're being weird. And I looked up at her from the rear view and I was like, I see it all. And she was like, I knew she knew. Like, so it was really cool because I went from my grandmother, who, again, she was a root worker. She was a seer. She spoke to ghosts all the time. And then I lived with between my dad and my mom for a long time. So I was always misplaced and there was a gap. And it's kind of like Millie came into my life and she became my mom. I lived with them for a while. And she nurtured me through my teenage years, through my 20s. And her mother was a Santero, and, you know, she practiced a lot. It was funny. I'd never met anybody who would like switch up into like Irish and Scottish accents, just like because she felt like it. Like she was just like in her bag, and she taught me tarot and she was amazing. So I remember one time she was like, Sophia, do you know the Akashic Records? And I was like, no, I don't know what that is. And she explained it to me. And the next day she came downstairs and it was like a 2-page download from an angel for me And I still, to this day, I was just thinking about it the other day. I was using the bathroom. I was like, I wish I knew where that was. So I wish I kept it. But that was my first introduction. But like, I didn't really understand it. You know, I'm 15. Yeah. I'm like smoking weed. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't. Yeah. But as I got older, I moved to Philly. I worked in the Botanica, and it kept like popping up in you know, little places. But I never, like, it was always adjacent, right? It was always like, we're here. And that happens so much, right? And when you're on this path where like, they just like turn on a light for you to let you know it's about to come. And I remember, I think like, I don't actually honestly remember how I had this conversation with somebody about the Akashic Records. It was probably like 2018. I talked to my husband and I was like, I want to leave beer. I don't want to do it anymore. I want to help people. I just don't know how or what that means. And, you know, I'd really come to this place where, you know, my husband, really, the relationship with him really taught me, like, not only do I deserve to be loved, but I deserve to love. Mm-hmm. And I think that we also often forget how much we kind of board ourselves up from loving because we're so scared. Yeah. And through that, I was able to like do a lot of shadow work, to learn a lot about Carl Jung. Like, I just, like, all I knew was like, I had come from nothing. I came from, you know, my sister was selling guns and drugs. Like, I come from like a really rough background. And for some reason, I just listened and I get to live this awesome life I never knew existed. So I knew I wanted to help.
Yeah.
Somehow the Akashic Records came up in conversation. And actually, it was with this woman in New York who I've lost contact with. We never met in real person, like in real life. And this is before COVID. And she's like, she brings up the Akashic Records and she's like, you should get a reading from this woman, Kia, who's now passed. And I was like, all right, whatever. And I get a reading from her and I didn't get it. Like, I was just like, okay, fine, whatever. This is whatever. Yeah. But I was starting to work on Divine Void, and doing tarot readings didn't feel right to me. Like, it's something, but there was something happening. There was something happening in my real life. Like, butterflies were following me places. Like, there was just like something magical happened, and I couldn't remember what it was. And I remember getting a reading from Shannon, our buddy Shannon, shout out. And when we got on Zoom, I remember her saying something to the effect of like, I feel really familiar with you, and like, I know that we are friends, or something to that effect, in a very Shannon way, you know. And most of the time with other spiritual people, I'd be like, yuck, no. Don't tell me. But I did feel it. And it was really interesting. And everything that she dropped in that reading, I started following it. And then I started practicing more and more. And I had already had accumulated a bunch of different books on the Akashic Records. I didn't know about Linda Howe until like after Shannon. And then I took the class with Kia, who was also an Akashic Records practitioner and teacher through Linda Howe. I wasn't really feeling it. And like I said, I didn't feel resonance. Like, when I was in there, I was like, I don't know. Like, I'm just being psychic, right? Like,
yeah.
And then somehow I found Helen, of course, the internet. And I took a class with her. And I remember somebody in that class, I'm not going to say who, I remember someone in that class being like, well, I'm a seer. I'm an indigenous seer. And like, so I see things all the time. I really don't like see the difference. And like, you know, just like, you know, some people like to say what they are just to like,
yeah,
you know, I'm going to ask a question to let you guys know how smart I am.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that. And I kind of got what she was saying, but at the same time, I remember feeling something in my ear, and it was like, because she's not in the Akasha. And I remember like being like, huh, startled, because I physically heard it. Like I physically heard it.
Yeah.
So we do a practice with Helen, and I remember physically smelling roses.
Yeah.
And I felt like this like reverb, and it was so wild.
Yeah.
And this was after I took my bhakti training. So I think I needed to crack my heart open. And I think that what we probably miss over, the whole reason I talked about my husband and love, is that the Akasha is such a heart opening practice.
Yes.
And you know, it's funny because you were like, well, I don't like teach or practice from the Hindu perspective. And I'm like laughing because I'm like, you do. It's very bhakti. It's very devotional. It's very heart opening. There's a lot of removals of mental bodies. Like, and when I got in there, it was just like, this is what I do. Now, maybe a year after that, I completely removed myself from it. I stopped giving readings. I started exploring. I started offering like very different offerings, because I just felt like the Akashic records did not fit for me.
Yeah.
And I was comfortable enough to say that to like my following, like, look, I'm not doing it. I'm done with the Akashic records.
Yeah.
But when I came back to it, what I recognized was that I'm in the Akasha. That definition doesn't fit for me anymore. And maybe it fits for somebody who's like level one, level two, intro, whatever, you know, if that's your way of getting in, that's your way of getting in. That's how I got in.
Yeah.
But the idea of the celestial library of information, it's so far beyond our intellect.
Yeah.
It's so far beyond a space to get information. It's just so much more. And it's kind of like, you know, it's the theory of relativity. Like, if you move at the speed of light, you experience all things at once, all time at once.
Yeah.
And the more I practice this, I experience this. Oh, wait, now my dream is starting to make sense. I experience this warp of time and conceptual human thinking, right? And so what I want to touch on is like this practice, when we get into it and as we develop, you know, like when you take a class and you become certified or whatever, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It really comes down to feeling the resonance in your body. And that takes practice. You can only gain confidence and experience through practice. And so, you know, it took me a few times to like get it. I didn't have the same reaction you had. I was just like, I don't know, maybe I'm here. Like, I hear you. Here I am. I'm not feeling it. But it took till something made sense, to like till I aligned somewhere.
Yeah.
And not only did I feel it, I physically smelled it. I physically heard it. And there's your senses are so involved in Akashic work, beyond third eye, knowing, whatever. Like, I don't know about you, like, but well, actually I do know about you. I have seen you physically like shiver throughout a whole reading. Yeah. So like it affects, it affects you. So, you know, one thing I want to note for people that are like interested in this work, it does take a lot of practice, but it also takes like, you have to have that conversation with yourself. If you really want to do this, if this is what you want to do, and maybe that's why looking at Vedic texts are like, this is for distinguished markers. These are for people that are realized attainment of yoga. That's opening your heart, removing the fear, like removing your limitations of like what your intellect tells you, what your programming tells you. And like, be prepared to like, let your brain be mush. I mean, I think maybe if it wasn't for the Akasha, I probably wouldn't enjoy like having my brain swirled up as much as I do. Like, I want you to tell me I'm wrong, because I want to know why. I want to change my point of view, because I want to see all angles.
What is that?
My dogs.
No.
They're like, yes, preach. So, you know, it takes more than one class, and it takes more than, it's not the psychic development class.
Yeah.
It is a very different practice.
Yeah.
You know, anyways.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say that's like why it's taken me 8 years to do this mentorship, because I've had and I've taught intro classes that were like 3 hour classes multiple times. I've taught hundreds of people. I've done readings for hundreds of people over the last 8 years, but I didn't feel secure in taking on ongoing students until this year, because I was like, what am I teaching? And I was like, oh, I'm not really teaching anything, but I'm holding a container where people can become devotional. And I had to really like, because the records would tell me this over and over again, and they would use the word devotion. And at first I was like a little bristly, like that's churchy. I don't, why would you use that? And I had to really like define, like, what am I doing here? Oh, it's not creating a year-long practice of a mentorship. And one of the primary like asks in this mentorship is that you open your records or you do your practice every single day, even if it's just 5 minutes, just get into the habit. And it's not to accomplish something like, okay, check, I did my Akashic practice, but it's to become devotional, which is to develop a love and a loyalty to this thing, to this experience, really to yourself, versus an obligation. Like, oh, I got like a community service. I did my thing. I accomplished my task. That doesn't shift you. That just keeps you running. It just keeps you like you're putting out a fire. And what the shift for me, like I come from a background of having like, I would say chronic depression my entire life. Like the first time I started seeing a therapist, I was 3 years old. Because as soon as I learned how to talk, I told my parents I wanted to kill myself. Like, I have been in and out of therapy my whole life. I've had severe bouts with, my mental health, and then I've had very, really great moments. But it wasn't until for me, and so I'm not telling anyone to stop your mental health protocols, but like for me, getting into a space that took all the pressure off of me to be, to perform, to accomplish, that I could be loved and lovable even if I do nothing, even if I am struggling with anxiety and depression to the point where I can't get out of bed for 3 days or whatever. That was like at first unbelievable, but then because I allowed myself to just be curious, like, what if this thing is real for me? It wormed its way in, like it got inside me. And I want to say that, like, I would say 2017 is when I got really like devoted myself. And so that's like 2 years, a year and a half after practicing, learning how to practice. But, like, my entire perspective has shifted. Like, I don't want to say I am, oh, I'm like enlightened. I don't have bad days. Of course, I have bad days. Of course, I have like bouts of like, wow, I'm in a depressive episode or I have anxiety right now. But it was no longer now like my identity. It no longer was like the only possibility for my existence. Now there were other possibilities in which it felt good to be alive. It felt like I had so many choices that this was a gift. And so I started having all these students come and be like, well, how do I get to be like you? How do I believe what you believe? How do I read like you read? And I knew like right off the bat, like, I don't like those questions. That is a turnoff to me. I don't want anyone to be like me. I want you to be like you and have like empowerment behind you being you. And so it wasn't until this year that I was like, oh, this is about devotion. Yes, you need to be studied and learned and like critical of your practice. And like it helps to read the books. It helps to like have all these informed like perspectives on what you're doing. But the big part of this, like a certification doesn't do shit if you're not opening yourself up to the curiosity of like, what's possible here? What could enter my life? And I'm not going to say that everyone in this, like, I cannot and will not say that anyone in this mentorship will have any experience like I've had. That's not, but that's also not the goal. The goal is for them to have the experience that they are going to have. But what happens when you like let this in? And the other thing that I know that I've been talking a lot, but well, the other thing that I wanted to say is like, it is an incredibly loving experience. Absolutely. It is the most loving kind of session I think you could have if you're going to go out and get a reading. It, if the practitioner knows what they're doing.
Yes.
It is incredibly compassionate. It is, there's just like, I'm always like, you know, when people come to me and they're like, but what about this that I did? What about this? And I'm lazy here and I don't do that. And I'm like, try me, press me. I will mm-hmm. not ever show you the limit to which you're like unlovable. Like there's no limit to the love that is there for you. So like, keep trying. Tell me you murdered someone. Tell me you like did stole from like whatever. And there's still on a soul level, there is no limit to that love available to you. But what I have learned is, you know, like in we didn't really talk about this, but like in the new age episode, like how people weaponize the idea of love and light.
Yeah.
In the new age world and the records. And I say this now, I'm like, that's because they don't fucking understand what love and light is. If they like, one of the things that like has occurred to me is that like, love is so present. It is so in, it is who we are at to such an extent that even in the midst of war, love is present. You would not fight about something if you were apathetic. You would not fight about, you know, like in the midst of like the most terrible situations, that's evidence that love is there. But we are like taught that love is like feels only good, is only this thing. And like, no, we don't understand.
It's conditional. It's very conditional.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think that people that do the whole love and light and they're like scared to, I mean, you and I have, and you guys listening will hear, like, we have very raw conversations about evil. And that's, I think, something we're going to touch on at some point.
Yeah.
But I think that true love is being able to see the angles in which you are able to forgive or forget or see the perspective in an empathetic understanding point of view. It doesn't necessarily mean it's right, but doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong either. Like, it's such a heavy thing to express and talk about, and that'll be its own thing. But like, I think that that whole love and light, the thing that like really upsets me about that is it is conditional. The same, it's the same way I feel like people who are like too polite or like overly polite. I'm like, fuck you, you Nazi. What's going on? what are you hiding? But it doesn't feel truth, right? Because we have to honor all aspects of self the way we have to honor all aspects of nature. And nature is gnarly. I do want to make a point. You were talking about mental health. Leah does see her gossip doctor religiously. So
I go to therapy.
She didn't jump out. And I take Zoloft. So
I'm getting a PhD in psychology.
So. Yes. So let's like make sure that we're like, we just want to let y'all know. It doesn't mean jump one to another.
Right.
But no, I think that you've made some really great points. And you know, that the whole, I think that like the way that the Akasha has shown up in my life, like how it kind of like showed up when I was 15 and then showed up here and showed up there. Like I needed to be in the right space.
Right.
You know, I almost feel like it was just, again, you know, this is me talking about your spiritual ecosystem. It was in my ecosystem.
Right.
I just wasn't open yet. And I didn't take the Akashic Records practices seriously until after I practiced bhakti. And when I took that yoga teacher training, I really thought I was going to teach yoga. Yeah. I didn't give a shit about yoga. I gave so much, I cared about the philosophy and like it like burst open my heart. And I think I really needed that hammer to come down to get myself ready for the kind of work that the Akasha opens you up to. I do think, because we're running out of time, I do think we should do a part two on this, because
I think so too, because there's so much more to say. And I think we should get to some questions.
Yeah. I think what we should do is we're going to do our question corner. And we're going to answer. We got a lot of questions and comments, and there's, we had to shuffle through them. So we're going to answer a couple. I think we do a part two. We'll answer a few there. Yeah. We want to try to keep this, you know, not too long for you guys, but I think the goal is to maybe eventually do a Patreon where we get to these questions. Cause it was a lot of questions.
Yeah. So, we got a lot.
I'm really stoked that y'all are taking it seriously. Also, I also want to shout out everybody who's listening, downloading, watching video, because we had a really, I feel, I have no barometer for success in podcasts, but I feel a very successful week, and it really made my heart like scream. Like I'm still running high on it. So for that.
Totally. Yeah. Do you want me to kick off the questions?
Yeah. Question corner. You do.
All right. So the first one I think is really a great question. Someone asks, did either of you find the Akasha to be witty and sarcastic in its responses?
Bitch, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I get sassed the fuck out sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's 100%. But again, it has a lot to do with where I'm at in the Akasha. So like when I'm in that like really, I say high, but it's not linear. Certain dimensions, there's no sarcasm. Like the angelic realm, there's certain deities around, like there's no sarcasm. But I feel like when the resonance isn't as trancy, it gets really sassy really quick.
Yeah, it's weird. I would say 100%. So there are many ways to access the records. And I've used a variety of ways, from like meditation to sound baths to prayers, my own invocation. And in general, the voices can be very different. Or like the tone is different. When I feel like, I don't know how to explain this, and it's just occurring to me right now as I'm thinking about this, but it's almost like I go to this, well, in my, now what I go to, or like for now, it's called the Divine Strategy, the Infinite Mystery. And that is essentially a fancy name for like, I mean, I don't even want to go onto it, but it's like the Akashic field, like that field, the ether, the nothing. And also the place of all like creation. But when I'm there, it does feel like a almost impersonal experience. And then there are other moments where I'm like talking to my buddies. Yeah. And when I'm talking to my buddies or when they're talking to me, it is so incredibly sassy. Like I had a client. Oh my God. I had a client who was asking about essentially this person. And I'm not trying to make light of this at all, but this person was at the end of their rope and they were like, essentially booked a reading with me to ask permission to commit suicide. And the records, so we're talking about everything that could, did, will exist, multiplicities of existence. You know, like, they were like, yeah, we'll just see you next lifetime. And of course, I did not say that to this person in pain. But like in my head, I'm like, you motherfuckers.
Like, yeah.
Like the like, but that kind of like perspective, the zoom out perspective where you're like, oh my God, it doesn't matter. It matters. It 100% matters. This is not me condoning suicide by any means. In fact, I will fight for your life. But on a soul level perspective, where I am one iteration of infinite iterations, where I am a part of all that exists.
They're like, it just keeps going.
Yeah. You can't even kill yourself, actually. How about that?
Yeah. I want to say, if you ever read Allan Kardec, which is very different than what we understand spiritualism to be. It's very different than the American side of spiritualism, but Allan Kardec basically ran a whole bunch of tests in a scientific way with mediums. And one of the things that he says, or one of the answers that comes through, is that the spirits and the evidence or answers that you receive is going to be equal to your desires and your questions. So like, if you are asking something like that, right, they're going to come back with something. I mean, that's happened to me so many times where they're like, are you fucking serious right now? You know, and I have to be like, let me filter this through my reading scope. Like, give you something a little bit different. But it is kind of like that. And so, dependent on who I'm working with, You know, whatever I access is going to be connected specifically to you, to yeah. your personal resonance, not yes. to what I can access.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, if that comes through, that comes through.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely had a couple of times where like I've asked questions, even myself, and they're like, you already know the answer. Yeah. I get that a lot. They already yeah. know the answer. Yeah. You already know the answer.
Yeah.
Like yeah. don't waste our time. I will say though, when I am working with the angelic realm, which I most of the time am working in that realm, they have definitely come through not sassy, but real smart. Like real, and I think there's like a limitation to like our existence and our understanding where yeah. they just like, I don't know. It's not patience,
yeah.
but when you work with the angelic realm, they're a little curt. They can be a little curt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah,
I feel like I should just add on to this question incidentally, just in case if there is anyone listening that is having suicidal ideations or this is yes. a sensitive issue, that like what the records ended up guiding me with this client and subsequent clients is asking the question, because the records were like, they would not book a session with you with a stranger if they were intent on accomplishing this thing. So right. there's an opening here. There's an opportunity for shifting perspective. So let's shift their perspective. And so what they had me ask this client was, suicide is a way to meet a need. Mm-hmm. Let's look at what your need is, and let's see if there are other ways to meet this need that don't include suicide. And so it ended up being, I mean, not to toot my own horn, but this person came back at me at like 2 weeks later and was like, this changed my life. I don't want to yeah. die. And so we looked at like, well, what do you need? What, and those are the dire things, but then how do we do that? And so I just wanted to just say that for anyone that might actually be experiencing that right now.
Yeah. I don't think either you or I take suicide very lightly whatsoever. And
yeah.
I think that one of the beauties of doing this work is being there for somebody who feels like nobody is there.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they have no other options. They can't right. see any other options. Yeah, totally.
Right. Okay. So moving on. Next question.
You want to ask the next one?
Yeah. Let me ask one. Cause this one, I had a really good question. Do the records ever misinform us to protect the future outcomes?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Really good.
Oh, do you want me to start with that one or do you want to start
yeah,
with it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Start. Okay. I would say yes, but not in the way that you're thinking. I would like let go of the idea of misinformation. I would let go of the idea of protection, and then look at when you go into the records and you ask something and it feels like, okay, this feels right. And then that thing does not happen. You could come back and be like, wow, I was misinformed. I wonder if it was for protection or what other reason I was misinformed. I would say, and this is not the good old new agey, but we're going to do it anyway. Like, oh man, this is like words, but also not words that are not, that words are not going to help me. If you go in asking for certain information that has to do with time, like when will this thing happen? How will this thing happen? So process, and you're looking for those facts. In the moment of asking, you may only be a match for certain possibilities. And that doesn't mean that other possibilities don't exist, but it's like the strongest, most resonant ones are the ones that will come forward to you in that moment. You could walk out your door 5 minutes later and you shift into another reality where that's no longer the strongest yes. possible outcome. And if you have like a mindset or like a perspective where you're like looking for, am I being misinformed? Do I need to protect myself from harm? Like if those are things that are like a part of the way you see existence or the world or your life or whatever, then that might be the way you interpret like a mismatch of the reading and what actually happens. But the thing that's so amazing about the Akashic Records, it's for me or the Akasha or whatever we're doing, is that we can go in and be like, hey, this thing didn't happen, or it didn't happen the way I expected, or it didn't happen the way you told me. What do I need to know? What other things are now present that weren't in the moment of like receiving this information? And then we like, that's like how I would interpret or reshape, like shift perspective on that question.
Yeah, I agree 100% with what you say, especially the part like when you get any reading, whether it's the Akashic reading, psychic reading, tarot, bones, I don't care.
Yeah.
Whatever you are desiring, wherever you are in that moment, can shift. So it can be true, but it can be not true. Like, you know, truth is just a perspective, right?
Totally. Yeah.
I'm not a fan of learning lessons, that whole idea.
Yeah.
But I don't think anything is misinformed so that there are opportunities for you to continue to do whatever it is that you need on a soul level. So for example, if you're like, hey, I want to know this outcome, and you get the wrong answer, but it helps you lower your expectations. We have to remember, like, one of the things, one of my like credos to all of my clients and anyone who's ever worked with me, is you will constantly hear me say, let go of what that looks like.
Yeah.
Let go of what it looks like. If you think you want to do work in the psychic realm or whatever, let go of what that looks like. You might not be a psychic. You might be a psychic painting interpreter. You might make it up. Like, let go of what it looks like. So even when you are getting a reading from somebody else, the interpretation language is so limited. So that's one thing that can be a quote misinformed. The second thing is like, I feel that they give you what you need in that moment.
Yeah, totally.
So like, if you are like, should I quit my job? I don't know. And they're like, that's up to you. Like, in my reading, still be like, that's up to you. What do you want? What do you want out of this? What would happen? What's the worst thing, you know? But if, say, another practitioner is like, yes, and you quit your job, and now you're like, fuck, I can't get another job. I don't know what's going on. Well, where's the opportunity? What is this time that you need? What, it, you know, there's just like so much more involved in our evolution, in our experiences, that like we don't necessarily need the answer for, or it might derail us from that. So I think the idea of like misinformation, like, we have to completely eliminate that, because that gives us the context of an expected answer, and you can't always expect that, because then you wouldn't experience it.
I'm generally wary of readers that are like, yes, this will happen. No, it's not for you. Like, get out of my way. I don't.
Okay. I'm like, watch me.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
All right, your turn. And then I think we do part two and answer more questions then.
Okay. I'm going to go with this doozy, because this is going to really kick us off. Like, this is a lot. Thoughts on how to null and void contracts if not yet comfortable inside of or accessing the records. What are your thoughts?
I have so many thoughts.
I know.
First off, if you're not comfortable in the records, that says to me that you are, you're limiting yourself. There's fear. There's insecurity around the unknown. And I think that also placing an idea of a contract keeps something known for you. I don't believe in contracts. It's safe, right? I don't believe in contracts, because I believe in limitlessness. Yeah. Like, I mean, I will go as far as, and this is going to be a very unpopular opinion, I don't believe in human design, because I feel like it limits us to our ability. Yeah. And I just by nature always want to rub against the grain. And I don't want somebody telling me, well, you are built to be like this, because I'm going to say,
human design.
I know it's a very unpopular opinion.
Yeah. No, I get
but
what you're saying though. I get
but
what
you
you're
know,
saying.
so
Yeah.
I believe in limitlessness, right? And
Yeah.
so a contract says you are bound by
Yeah.
something. But here's the thing about law. Because if something is legally binding, law is to be interpreted. It's an art form, it's not a science. So it's not
Right.
cut and dry.
Yeah.
So really, truthfully, a contract is only true if you've signed off on it.
Yeah.
And I don't sign off on that. I don't
Yeah.
believe that. I think I have the ability to do what I want. And also, like, if I'm not going to do it in this lifetime, I'll do it in the next lifetime. Like, I'm
Yeah.
not going to put limitations on myself. So, with that being said, the whole question says to me there's an insecurity, there's a look for safety, there's fear, there's doubt, there's mistrust. And so what I would say is practice on that, practice
Yeah.
on the doubt, practice on the trust where you
Yeah.
can. And it's not even, it doesn't need to be a meditative thing. It can be very small. Practice trust in your relationships.
Yeah.
Practice knocking out self-doubt by like giving yourself reasons why you could do
Yeah.
something. You
Yeah.
do these things in the mundane to like, it's a muscle and it creates this muscle in the spiritual. And then as you feel comfortable, you will start getting into the records and you start to trust what is being said to
Yeah.
you. When you do that, you start to nullify these ideas of, I am bound to this thing.
Yeah.
I have a
Yeah.
contract. I. This
Yeah.
is that is that is so much baggage
Yeah.
that we already carry into every lifetime.
Yeah.
So I don't believe in
Yeah.
contracts, and I think the more you let go of those limitations, you will find that you also will not
Yeah.
believe in contracts.
Yeah, I agree with so much of that. When I hear the word contract, what I assume about that person is that there's something about their existence that they don't like, and the idea of a contract is a way for them to explain to themselves why they're in a situation that they don't prefer. Like,
Yeah.
I'm
I don't think
what?
it's that simple. I do think
What?
it's that simple, but I also think it's not that simple because we find ourselves in situations, no matter how much we've done the work, quote, quote,
Yeah.
and we find ourselves in those situations all the time. And so I think that is when we're like,
Yeah.
what the fuck else could I be
Yeah.
doing? And so a
Yeah.
contract does seem like the easy way out, right?
Yeah. Or like an explanation for like,
Right.
it's out of my power to change this. This is a
Correct.
contract. This is, yeah. And so like one of the things that I also don't believe in contracts for myself. But I believe that the experience of a contract is real for people that believe in it, just like a curse. I don't believe in
Right.
curses for myself, but I believe they are real for people that experience them and believe them, or that
Agreed.
believe them and therefore they have the experience. I would say that like it's in the same way that the idea of Akashic record was superimposed over a vastness that is like infinite. The idea of a contract is superimposed on like the experience of existence. And so like to me it's like an ontological view of what you're
Yeah.
experiencing, but another way to look at it is like you actually were given just the exact right ingredients for this lifetime. So like one of the things I think about a lot is like living in a fat body in a fat phobic society. I would, if I didn't have my Akashic perspective, if I just was thinking that society is true and it's the only way to be, then I might think like, wow, I'm here to suffer. I'm here to be oppressed. I'm here to like, nothing good can happen in this life. I'll never experience love. I'll never experience joy. I'll never feel beautiful, all these things. But what actually is true for me is that like, I have just the right body for the life of Leah. And I'm not going to focus on like, well, then what are the lessons of Leah? Like, it's not like about
Yeah.
achieving lessons, but that like there is a point to this thing, and it isn't. So like I could say that like I'm in a contractual relationship with my body. I can't just like tomorrow wake up and be a butterfly. That's, I mean, if I was totally like limitless, like you sure,
yeah, I mean, we're
but
not that far.
right, but like that's probably not going to happen. I'm going to be in this body that I'm in for the rest of my life. And so like I could look at that as like I'm powerless to this. I have no agency. this is the worst, but it has been a shift in my experience to be like, whoa, what kinds of actual amazing, important, empowered, loving things are possible and present already in this body?
Yeah.
And so like, when I think about, when people are asking about contracts, I immediately want to ask, like, what is the thing you're trying to escape about this situation that you're in? What, where actually do you have agency here? Where do you have choice? Where has that been like obscured for you and you think you don't have it? Mm-hmm. And like, what are your unmet needs? So yeah, I don't go about that business of like nullifying or, but like looking at it, like, let's look at your situation from a different perspective.
Yeah, I do feel that people that offer tearing up your contracts or burn up your contracts, yeah, they're looking for money. So like, be careful for that.
Yeah.
I do think that, yeah, you are the creator of your reality. So like, it might feel very real for you. But again, like, I don't really believe in lessons. I believe in opportunity. And I think there's opportunity to look at that. And I can say from my own personal experience, I've had a pattern. I've had a really weird pattern with like single white female stuff, where it's like, I meet these people who become my really close friends, but then they like take on the way I speak, the way I dress. It's really weird. They want to date the people I'm with. I've even had people take my jobs, not take my jobs,
but I've had that experience too with a friend.
It's really weird. And I was like, what is this about? And it was making me crazy. And it got to the point where I was like, maybe this is a contract. And, you know, I was like, oh, I did it all. Like, I even like got down to like binding, and it was just like, I did everything.
Yeah.
And then I went to my gossip doctor, and she was like, why do you think it has something to do with you? And I was like, what keeps happening to me? And she was like, have you thought about this having nothing to do with you? And I was like,
okay.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
So I went home and I was like, what if this has nothing to do with me? And I was like, what if I just not hyperfixate on this and just let it go? Because it has nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
And have not had the issue since.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe that worked for me, but in that thing, in that unmet needs realm, like, what if it just has nothing to do with you?
I mean, a new age interpretation of what you just said is that like, that perspective shift shifted your vibration, and then you stopped being a vibrational match for those scenarios,
right?
So it's like another way to look at it.
I mean, I just meet people that are like me now, so
other baddies.
Hey, other baddies who have the same job as I do. But I think, so I would say, like, you know, I think I'd like to end this, unless you have something else to say, but I think I'd like to end this episode on one of the beauties of the Akasha and working in this realm isn't necessarily gaining more intellectual information.
Right. Yeah.
It's about gaining perspective.
Yeah.
Various.
I love that.
Perspectives.
Yeah.
So not even anything that has anything to do with you, your own concept of a reality or the super consciousness, but just various perspectives.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that makes you so much more human and loving.
Yeah. I love that. That's so beautiful. That's a beautiful way to end. I'm going to share that with my students. I love that because they're very stressed out with like, I'm not receiving messages. I don't know what to do. And I'm like, let that stress go, man.
Like, I don't think I could like teach your class, like do what you do. Cause I'd be like, it's not about that, man. Yeah. It's about like the vibration.
Yeah, I know.
It would be like, why am I paying this person?
Yeah. Yeah. Why am I paying this person?
You should throw me in as a substitute one day and be like, okay, oh, yeah, we're going to watch a movie today.
I would love, I know.
I'll record it for you. I'll actually be a substitute teacher. I won't mind.
That would be so fun.
Okay. It'd be funny. So I think next recording we're going to do a part two. We're going to answer more of these questions. And again, I think Leah and I are going to start exploring some options for you all to be more interactive with us, because
yeah,
y'all took this very seriously. So, which I'm so grateful for, because that means that
Me
there
too.
is an audience for us weirdos.
Yeah, I love it. It's so cool. Yeah.
It
thank
is
you
very
so
cool.
much, everyone. This has been
Yes,
lovely.
thank you, everyone. Please, again, share, download, subscribe, do all the things.
Five
And
stars.
five stars, five star
Rate us.
ratings. Talk about how awesome we are. And
Yeah.
we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.